Hello, and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 29.
This week on the podcast, the Romney campaign makes the worst blunder in the history of the world. No, really.
And a free-falling Romney campaign tries to distract us by reminding us why we were angry at him before.
The Romney campaign's worst blunder in history causes a Democratic surge in the Senate.
And Steve King debuts a mathematical theorem explaining the annoyance of wasted time to a confused Congress.
Churches and penises galore pepper our podcast today.
All that and more on Brain Trust Live.
So the Chicago teachers have gone back to work.
Yes.
That's the story that we've been sort of like obsessing over for the last couple weeks.
Yeah. Really since your mom was.
Since my mom was here. Since Labor Day.
Since Labor Day, yeah.
But that's not the biggest story of this week by any measure. And the biggest story of the week, I think, maybe doesn't need any introduction except for the audio clip that spawned it. So we're going to play for you.
And you've probably heard it, but the more you hear it, the more infuriating and ridiculous it becomes. So I think it's worth giving another listen.
So this is Mitt Romney speaking to a group of wealthy donors at a private fundraiser.
There are 47% of the people who will vote for the president no matter what. All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they are entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But it's an entitlement, and government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what. And I mean, the president starts off with 48, 49, 40, he starts off with a huge number. These are people who pay no income tax. 47% of Americans pay no income tax. So our message of low taxes doesn't connect. And he'll be out there talking about tax cuts for the rich. I mean, that's what they sell every 4 years. And so my job is not to worry about those people. I'll never convince them that they should take personal responsibility and care for their lives. What I have to do is convince the 5 to 10% in the center.
So, sorry for the poor audio quality. As you maybe know, this was part of a release of videos that Mother Jones put out this week.
Yeah.
There was a whole bunch of them from this fundraiser.
It's a treasure trove.
It's a treasure trove. And this is like the most compelling clip from it.
We could devote the whole podcast to this.
It's endless, the number of silly things that he said to this group of wealthy, random rich white guys.
Which I love that one of his excuses sort of for this after the fact too was that he was speaking to donors and it was all off the cuff.
Yeah.
So basically like, I was saying what I actually think.
Exactly. Off the cuff, this is what I actually believe.
Right, yeah.
But there are a few different parts of this. And we wanted to sort of give you the full clip, just so that you could sort of hear the whole thing in conjunction with itself. But there's the element of it that's him claiming that 47% of people don't pay income taxes,
right?
Which is true, but it ignores the fact that many of them pay taxes of many other kinds. Property, sales, you know,
it also sort of completely forgets that probably a lot of the people in that room were not paying very much income taxes. Because they're able to get around paying any income taxes.
Exactly.
We're going to get to that, actually.
As well. It sort of seems to suggest that he only really cares about 5 to 10% of the electorate and that he doesn't feel like he has an obligation to represent anyone else.
Right.
That this 47% doesn't deserve his representation.
Which a lot of people this week from both sides really were sort of pretty much implying that would disqualify you from being the president.
Well, exactly.
Which it sort of does.
Yeah. I mean, you're still, when you get elected president, you know, the people that elected you, maybe you want them to elect you again. So you try to do nice things for them because you want their votes again.
Yeah.
But you still are the president of the whole country. Like, you're not the president of 53% of the country.
Right, exactly.
But this is sort of, I think it was interesting phrasing, I think, because the 53% was a blog that emerged in response to the 99% blog after Occupy. This is a figure that gets talked about a lot, this 47%. The 47% of people that don't pay income taxes are mostly retired, veterans, disabled people. Yeah. It's not just like lazy people who are sitting around not doing anything. It's like unemployed people, people on Social Security, veterans, and disabled people.
Well, and also there was sort of, like a map that someone put out too this week that basically was like, you know, of the places that have like the highest percentage of people who don't pay income taxes, they're
live in red states. Absolutely.
Like, so those are the people. So he's just wrong in the sense that they're voting for Obama, because they're not.
They're not. No.
They're voting for him.
And, I mean, I think his sort of implication that the idea of lowering taxes doesn't resonate with them, so he doesn't owe them anything, is like the most blasphemous thing I've ever heard on the presidential trail.
I agree.
I think it's the most blasphemous thing that really anyone's ever heard on the presidential trail. I know, you know, this is sort of an interesting situation because this was him at a private fundraiser. He didn't know he was being recorded.
Yeah.
He should have known because he lives in the age of iPhones and any idiot could have recorded him doing this. Like, I mean, anywhere that you are as a presidential nominee or as a Republican Party nominee who's running for president, you should assume that there's a camera on you.
Yes.
Because there is a camera on you.
Yeah. This was a thing that John McCain had to learn, too.
Yeah.
I think it's,
well, even Obama had to learn this.
Obama had to learn it, too.
He's had these problems before, but no one has ever even approached this level of just, like, disdain for the voting public.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
This was, and it, you know, I mean, mixed with all of his other sort of shenanigans,
like, yeah, exactly. And there were so many other, like, weird pieces in there, too, about, you know, people think that they're entitled to, like, I think that he listed food in there, and it's just sort of like,
shelter?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm
no,
entitled
why are
to that.
We living in a country if we're not entitled to food and shelter? Like, why bother organizing into a society? Be an anarchist if you're not into other people having food and shelter.
Yes. Exactly.
I mean, Bloomberg News ran this story with the headline, "Today Mitt Romney Lost the Election."
Yeah.
And
they were not alone either. But
no,
I mean,
this was a widespread headline, sort of thematic, you know, headline. Uh-huh. And I think that this is probably the most, like, blatant, like, these headlines are the most blatant indication that something has gone wrong that I've ever seen in a presidential race in my life.
Yeah.
I've never seen a candidate do something that has caused every major news source to run a headline that basically says, "Today Mitt Romney lost the election."
Yes.
I mean, this
and
was bad.
It came from Republicans, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
the Wall Street Journal had a headline.
Yes, and
that was
Republicans, I mean, from everywhere, we're running away from it, too. I mean, we're sort of going to get in a little bit to some Senate polls, but a lot of the down-ticket Republicans are having to run way away from this.
Well,
and
it just
sort
doesn't
of
resonate
like,
in their districts, because their districts are made up of people in that 47%.
Exactly.
I mean, who do they think votes in Mississippi? Taxpayers?
No.
No. Sorry. They don't live in Mississippi. We pay the taxes to Mississippi.
Exactly.
Mississippi is being paid to be there, and the 47% is living there.
Right.
Thanks to our
voting
generosity.
Yeah, exactly.
As them, you know, since they're living there thanks to a bunch of Democratic states that, you know, that pay their taxes for them.
Right.
So, I mean, this is not going to resonate with a lot of those local races, for sure.
No.
But it hasn't resonated. A lot of Republicans, I think, are sort of seeing the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
And are flipping the fuck out.
Yeah. I mean, you saw, like, Scott Brown get away from this really fast.
Yeah.
Linda McMahon, who's, like, running in Connecticut, who is sort of in a close race. Like, basically all Republicans in close races down ticket are, like, getting away from this as fast as possible. And
some of them were not down ticket until this comment came out, too. I mean, there's been movement in the last few weeks anyway in a lot of these races. But, like, Scott Brown only recently went down in the polls.
Yeah.
I mean, he's only recently had Elizabeth Warren sort of edge him out.
Yeah.
He's been leading this whole time. So,
but
this is not doing anyone any favors.
I think it was, I can't remember, it was Rachel Maddow or somebody this week, but basically it was like, when you have the person at the top of the ticket say something that then sort of becomes a litmus test for every single other Republican in the country, basically, to have to answer to.
Exactly.
Like, that's when you know you're sort of, like, up shit creek.
And this is the problem, is that what he was saying is largely what they believe.
Well, exactly, and that's
they
why...
they never had to vocalize that before, because, you know... Why would you ever say that you don't care about 40? You know, why would you ever pit the voting public against itself that way when the votes that you're depending on are residing with the people that you're putting down?
Yeah. Well, and I think that you saw that this week, too, because, like, while most of the Republicans did get away from this as fast as possible, you saw some of the crazies, like, really sort of, like, want him to go with this.
Yeah.
I mean, Rush Limbaugh was out there and was like, this is a good opportunity for him to sort of, you know,
really talk about what the...
you know, our entitlement society and this and that and the other. And it's just sort of like, I think it really was proof that that's where I think the party is at right now.
I mean, this is where the party is at. I don't think that they ever do themselves favors naming specifics. I think probably I mean, it's when you hear that clip and you're someone who believes that you deserve food, shelter, and healthcare.
Yeah.
Like, it's real hard to get around that, even if you're angry that 47% of the population doesn't pay income taxes.
Right.
I mean, it is difficult to, you know, and I mean, especially when the next fact that you hear always is that probably a lot of the people in that room were among those 47%.
Right.
I mean, Mitt Romney, and we're going to talk in a little bit about his income tax release, but
it was low.
He makes very little money as actual income. He does not pay income tax on most of his income.
Right.
It's all dividends and stuff like that.
Things
so,
that I don't understand.
Things, math things, that financial math stuff that me and Brent don't understand. Our hero, Soledad O'Brien, is back, though.
Yeah, we had left her for a while, but because she was really on the front lines of the $716 billion nonsense.
Exactly.
With the Medicare business.
We made her a hero of the week for a while.
Yes,
but
she's back, and she was grilling Bay Buchanan of the Romney campaign on this, who was sort of, you know, talking around it.
Yeah,
as,
well, as
you would do. That's what you would have to do. I mean, you couldn't address it.
But. No, exactly. Well, Soledad O'Brien said, you know, she was like, that's not true that 47% of the population doesn't pay taxes.
Yeah.
And Bay Buchanan was like, they don't pay income taxes. And Soledad O'Brien was like, but they pay every other kind of tax.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Most of those taxes are regressive. So they actually pay more of their income to those taxes.
Right.
Sales tax, things like that. Those taxes are more, they make up more of your, a percentage of your income, the poorer you are.
Yeah.
So sales tax is more expensive for poor people than it is for Mitt Romney.
Right.
So they actually are paying quite a bit in taxes. They're not just not.
They're paying. You know, they're paying more of their income in taxes,
exactly.
Even if they're not paying an income tax.
Exactly.
Right.
And Soledad O'Brien did the people's work and said just that, basically.
Yes. Uh-huh. So she's back on. She's back. Our hero of the week.
Our hero of the week is back up to her heroics.
Yeah. So all of this. This week has really just sort of like led Republicans to sort of like spiral out of control.
Yeah,
they're
totally
all panicking.
They're panicking
big time.
Yeah,
it's like a hot mess.
And I mean,
Party
every
right now.
News source is running a story about how the campaign's falling apart.
Yes,
which is not where you want to be.
No.
Right, going into the debates, like right before the election.
No,
it's not where you want to be at all. One of the people who the blame has been falling
squarely on
the most probably the most frequently named person who gets blamed for this is Stuart Stevens, who's sort of like the jack of all trades head of the Romney campaign.
It's a bizarre guy.
He's like this weird guy,
about,
and
but
his position is weird, and the campaign itself, as it turns out, is totally disorganized.
Yes.
Because Stuart Stevens is running it single-handedly, basically, and then has all these weird little poles of power in various locations that, I mean, the reason they don't sound like they've ever talked to each other about any sort of policy issues is because they haven't. It's like random people saying random things about this random guy that none of them spend time with in random cities across America.
Yeah. Well, and I think that this is sort of, I mean, you sort of had this, I mean, Romney is running this campaign, regardless of Stuart Stevens. And I think that, like, that is, you know, what a lot of people are saying is that he is the one that sort of, like, has to right this ship. And you would, you know, it's basically, like this Politico story says, it's like, in effect, he's the CEO of a billion-dollar startup, which is his campaign. And you sort of see when it becomes a little disconcerting that if he can't run that, then can
this
he
is,
run
I mean,
the country? And we sort of had a little bit of
running
that.
Running on his business experience,
and he's running
too.
On his business experience. But you sort of got, we had a lot of this. I think when any campaign sort of like starts to flounder, you start pointing fingers. I know this happened a lot in the Hillary campaign.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In 2008, everybody was pointing fingers at Mark Penn, and like they were talking about how much money they had wasted, and they were in debt, and everybody was, it was whose fault, and it was just because she had fallen behind. So that's what you do. But, I mean, it becomes a little scary when he sort of, like, can't be the head of this.
No.
I mean, it's...
And when he's responsible for
most
Olympics, of
the gaps.
He ran the
Olympics, but he can't run his own campaign.
I mean, this is part, like, with Hillary, you know, that's sort of a good comparison, because that was a campaign that eventually started to eat itself, essentially.
Exactly.
But it was eating itself because of an internal threat, basically, because Obama was coming from their own party, and he just had a better organized campaign, and he had sort of a more exciting image. And Hillary, you never got the impression that she didn't know what she thought. You got the impression that she was pissed off that her advisors were all starting to eat each other, basically.
Uh-huh.
But you never got the impression that she lost control of her message.
Right.
And Romney has not even given us the impression that he once had control of his message.
Right. Or once had a message.
Or once had a message.
Right. Which
and
is sort of and that's what a lot of people are upset about, is that they just sort of like don't think that he has a message. And I thought it was interesting. I heard somebody say this week that he has just been chasing news cycles, which I think is a good way to look at his campaign. He really hasn't. He's always been sort of having to respond to something as opposed to really sort of like laying out sort of a vision, which is either because he doesn't have one or because
Stuart Stevens has been getting so much shit for all of this.
He's in charge of that.
It's because he's in charge of that, but also he's basically been advising Romney to like avoid making any waves.
Yeah.
He thinks that he can sort of win it on the defensive.
Yeah.
Stuart Stevens, graduate of UCLA Film School.
Right.
That's his... He's been to, like, mysteriously a lot of different colleges, but he's, like, a film graduate.
Yep.
And he's done all this random weird shit with his life. Yes. Like, I don't know how he became qualified to be running this campaign in the first place. He, like, you know, had some... He's, like, written novels and a campaign memoir and stuff like that, but he's also, like, you know, skied to the North Pole and, like, he wrote something about how he'd used steroids to complete the race and, like, all sorts of, like,
Very weird.
Described in every account as this story that we sort of are referencing pointed out as eclectic.
Yes.
Which is sort of, I mean,
as you said, what'd you say earlier? It was, like, a nice way to say crazy or something like that. I mean, it is.
It's sort of, I mean, it's also a nice way of saying eccentric.
Well, right, yeah.
Too,
yeah.
I mean, among other things, but I mean, basically, at this point, the Republicans' own media is starting to turn on him. And because he's sort of like the only person who's really doing anything clear in this campaign, he's the only one with a clear role in this campaign, I think, you know, it's just starting to reflect on Romney badly. Because it's this one guy. Like, get rid of this one guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Find somebody who knows how to run a campaign.
Yeah.
You know, the Bushes, if they could do nothing else right, they could run a campaign.
Yeah, sure.
There are people who, in the same way that, like, the Clintons have all the Clinton people, and Obama just hires a lot of Clinton people a lot of the time to do stuff, because the Clintons are sort of, like, the political machine of our time.
Yeah.
The Bushes had a political machine.
Yeah.
A behind-the-scenes political machine. Right. It doesn't even have to be people with names we recognize.
No.
It doesn't have to be any of that.
You just have to get shit done.
You just have to get shit done. You have to have someone in control of your message. That's the only thing Republicans used to be good at.
Yeah,
and that wins you an election.
It does.
The message is all that matters.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there's some sort of media theory that we could talk about here.
Probably.
That uses stupid words like...
I probably should have learned it in journalism school. I probably did, and I've since forgotten.
I think my dad probably teaches it in his class.
Yeah.
It probably has something to do with, you know, simulacrum or something like that. But no, I mean, this is just sort of like... It's... Their campaign is... in such dire straits that their own media is starting to report heavily on how terrible things are in the campaign. And there's not really any news coming out about anything else. And because of that, every Republican has had to start commenting on it.
Yeah.
First among them.
Yeah. Our
Renz
favorite
Priebus.
Favorite name head of the RNC that we can't still don't know how to pronounce his name.
Well, do you think there's a correct way to do it?
No.
I mean, ultimately, it may just be up to the sayer.
Yeah.
I think it's Renz. It's Renz.
We just
Renz
decided.
Priebus.
Yeah. But anyway, he, today, they were sort of, you know, like we mentioned earlier, having no specifics has been sort of one of the things that people have been on his case about.
Yeah.
About. And so when asked about that today, Renz Priebus said this.
As far as specifics go, we're the only ones talking about how to save Medicare. The president's the one that raided Medicare by $700 billion. I mean, we've got specifics coming out of our eyeballs.
So, spoken to George Stephanopoulos, who...
Coming out of their eyeballs.
Coming out of their eyeballs.
They can't even see straight.
That's
They've got so many specifics. Just specifics galore.
Yeah. And then he went on to name some of those... specifics, which are all just vague ideas for tax cuts that they could give people.
Yes, which
that he has not explained how they're going to finance in any way.
Exactly.
So the specifics remain the same.
Correct. Non-specific.
Non-specific.
Yeah.
They remain vague.
Mm-hmm. But they're coming out of their eyeballs.
They have so many of them. That's why they're having such a hard time explaining them, I guess.
Yeah.
Because they don't really know which specifics to go with. There are multiple facts that they could go with that are all contradictory.
Right.
Also on Romney's case... is Herman Cain.
His former challenger.
Yeah.
not coming to his defense.
No. First of all, here's some questions. Herman Cain, the quote that we're about to read you, was spoken while he was on his College Truth Tour. Why is he on tour?
I don't know.
What's he touring on?
He's probably touring a book or some sort of doing a panel that's based on his radio show or something. I mean, who knows? He's a media mogul.
He's Herman Cain on tour.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he was saying to this on his college tour that if he were the Republican nominee, he would have a, quote, substantial lead over Barack Obama. Mm-hmm.
And you know why? Because he does have specifics.
Yeah, he has some depth to his ideas. Mm-hmm. 999. That's right. We know his specifics.
Yeah, we do.
It's easy to distill into one simple thing that turned upside down is the devil's number.
Uh-huh.
Didn't make any sense, but he was nothing but specific.
Yes.
That entire election.
He had a plan that was crazy and didn't add up to anything, but it was there.
There were numbers stated.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of numbers.
Yeah.
He was also asked whether he would have any interest in pursuing, like, some sort of appointment in a Romney administration. As if he's qualified to do anything.
He said he wanted to be, like, the national defense. Didn't he say
he wanted to be some kind of cabinet member.
That he had no qualifications for. Well, he has no qualifications for anything.
Right, because his experience in life is running Godfather's Pizza.
To be offered any job in politics would be something that he'd be unqualified for, basically.
He's going to go out and convert the media.
Oh, yes.
He said...
He knows he can't.
He's going to join him.
Yeah, he's going to join him. Because he's going to... He would rather... The reason that he didn't want to be in a Romney administration is he wanted to do his own radio or television show.
Yes.
Which sounds hilarious. I want him on, like, a... I don't know.
I want
a comedy.
To be the Al Sharpton of Fox News.
I like that.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Al Sharpton is just speaking crazy things.
Love Al Sharpton.
He's so entertaining to watch.
I would vote for Al Sharpton. I've been saying that for years.
Well, and he's run many times.
I know.
Not recently.
No, I know.
We haven't gotten the chance.
No.
But I feel like at some point...
I would love the chance.
I would be willing to take the chance to vote for Al Sharpton.
Sarah Palin also
offering her 2 cents.
Yeah, she's got some advice. She's got some specifics for Romney.
Yeah, they should go rogue.
Go rogue.
Yes. As if they're not rogue already.
I know.
They're so far, they're so rogue that they don't even know where they are.
Their campaign has just been a rogue campaign so far.
They're lost is what they are. Right. They went rogue. They lost where their location was.
Right.
And now they're just wandering in rogue fashion.
Yeah, exactly.
And they continue to seize the opportunity to make more rogue decisions. Paul Ryan getting on the ticket.
Hello.
Rogue decision. Where did that come from? Nobody knows.
No.
So...
They're
taking her advice.
Yeah.
She doesn't realize it, but they're doing it.
Bill Kristol has been on Romney's case for weeks now.
Yeah.
And he said something very interesting today about what Romney should be doing.
They need to focus on the next 4 years, not just for months. If this election is just about the last 4 years, that's a muddy verdict. Bush was president during the financial meltdown. The Obama team has turned that around pretty well. The Clinton speech at the convention was very important in that way. How horrible was it 4 years ago? He's got to make it a referendum on a choice about the next 4 years.
I mean, basically what he's saying is stop harassing Obama about what's going on. It's not working.
Right. Well, and yeah, I mean, I think
obviously... The economy sucks, but it's getting better. It's not getting worse.
I mean, the main point in there was that obviously you need to talk about what you're going to do for the next 4 years. But hidden in there was... the statement that Obama turned the financial crisis around pretty well, which you don't expect to be coming out of Bill Kristol's mouth.
No, you don't.
I mean, I think that he probably accidentally said that.
Yes. No, I think he, I mean, it was definitely accidental.
It was part of a more overall point.
Exactly.
But
he didn't probably plan to say that sentence so that it could be soundbited.
No, I don't.
However,
I'm glad he did.
The point stands, which is that, you know, the economy sucks. Whatever.
Yeah.
But the Obama administration did not make it worse. They're slowly sort of helping things improve.
Yeah.
And to keep hammering them away on this when people are hearing that things are slowly improving and to not ever offer any specifics about what you're going to do to right the ship.
Well, exactly.
And it's insane.
It's crazy. And I think that I think what's interesting about what he said, though, is that if the election is going to be about the economy and the economy is getting better... and he wants Romney to say what he's going to do in the next 4 years that would make a difference, is he gonna only be able to talk about things that would make it worse? I mean, I just, you know what I mean? It's just sort of like...
That's the problem, I think that's the situation the Romney campaign is in right now.
The economy is getting better. They wanted to make it about the economy. People realize that he's gonna go back to the same policies that got us into the mess anyway. And so now he's sort of like, well, shit, I didn't see this coming.
Yeah. They dug themselves this hole.
Yeah.
Because there's... I mean, this is sort of like part of what the problem is with their platform, is that every time that Republicans come into office for 8 years, the economy ends up tanking in some awful fashion.
Right.
And either it writes itself while they're in office.
Yeah.
You know, Reagan gets remembered for being so glorious because shit turned around while he was still in office. But first, he caused the disaster.
Yes.
Or it doesn't. And then in the next election cycle, they have nothing to say because they have nothing to offer that didn't already get blamed for causing the crash in the first place.
Right. So, they tried to change the subject.
Right. The Romney campaign knows that shit's fallen apart.
Yeah.
And so they've tried a number of lame tactics.
Yes.
Including releasing Romney's 2011 tax return a little earlier than planned.
Right. Which they always said that they were going to do before the election.
But they said they were going to do it in October.
Right. Which is like 2 weeks away. So it's not like they really sort of like, you know, threw it out there like months in advance. And also... It's just sort of like, it's the year of the tax return that sort of we don't care about.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, it's just sort of like, it's the one that we knew was coming. We had sort of already heard what his rate supposedly was this year. And it's just sort of like, nobody cares about his last 2 years of tax returns.
Well,
I mean,
also,
we cared about 2010 because we sort of got some good nuggets about where he was hiding all of his money.
Exactly.
But, I mean...
We maybe cared about the grand scope of his tax returns, but year to year, we learn the same things over and over.
Right.
So if he's only going to release 2 years,
yeah,
then we're sort of like, we know a lot of the same things from this tax return that we knew from the last one.
Yeah.
He has money in offshore accounts.
Right. And
he's not
paying,
really
like,
paying taxes on them.
Like 2%.
Yeah, 2% taxes. And he's getting a rebate from the U.S. government because he has this money abroad. And he paid some taxes on it abroad.
Yeah.
He's taking deductions on losses and things like that. He is not paying very much in income taxes compared to how much he made because most of it has been capital gains.
His income tax rate, or his effective tax rate, was like 14.1%.
Right. So he pays, on his income, he pays 35%, but he only makes a couple hundred thousand dollars
income.
A year on income.
Right.
It's all
like
speaking fees and things like that.
Right.
And serving as board directors for other corporations and things like that. Most of his income is tied up in investments. Because of that, his tax rate is much lower because he pays a corporate... You know, he pays the capital gains tax rate on that, which is like 15%. Plus, he takes deductions on a whole bunch of shit.
Yeah.
So,
and but there were a lot of people who sort of like really looked hard at this and sort of realized that he sort of skipped some deductions that he could have taken.
There's
and
a reason
of,
he released this year and not any other year.
Right, because he can go back and refile an addendum to the 2011 tax year.
Yeah.
And basically I was reading something where somebody basically did the math on all of the deductions that he could take that he didn't take that would get his tax rate down to somewhere in the 9 to 10 range.
Yeah.
Which is substantial when you are, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's substantial for us because that's money that we're going to pay him back.
Right. Exactly.
That's not even just money he's not going to pay us.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to reimburse him for that money.
Yeah.
So,
well, and it's also just like a, you know, you're floundering when, like, your best way to change the subject is to remind people that you haven't released any of your tax returns. Like,
I mean,
duh.
That's
it's just
like,
such a, it's so, oh, I know, I'll remind them about my taxes.
Right, we'll
that's
go back to
I'll
talking
do.
About that. That was so much easier.
I know.
I mean, and it's all tied in, because this just helps remind all of us that he's a rich asshole
he's
who
a rich
thinks
47%
of us don't count.
Yeah.
So, like.
Didn't help.
The other tactic was that they released their medical records.
Right, which
he's
there was
healthy.
Nothing in. Yeah.
Do you want to know his weight? It's 184 pounds.
Seems reasonable.
It's about what I would expect.
Yeah, sure.
Paul Ryan is in excellent health. He's a health freak, so.
We would have thought.
We all guessed it.
Yeah.
I think that there is a history in Paul Ryan's family of early onset coronary artery disease.
Oh.
So he's got to keep up on the straight and narrow, or he could have some genetic, you know, predetermined health conditions coming up. But, you know.
Colonoscopy and prostate exams were clear. All
great.
Clear.
Thank God
good
we
news.
Know.
I know. Great news.
So, then when that didn't work, after releasing a bunch of incriminating documents, they decided to go on the attack again.
Yes.
And there was this hilarious incident that played out on Univision.
Yes. They had, like, a presidential forum on Univision that both Romney and Obama were at. It wasn't a debate. They were basically interviewed.
They were just sort of, like, hanging out and talking.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of a sort of word skirmish, if you will.
I think Obama ultimately misspoke. I sort of get his sentiment. But what he said was that you can only change Washington from the outside. You can't change it from the inside, which is sort of a curious thing for a sitting president to say.
This was a genius talking point. I disagree with you. I'm going to let you finish, and then I'm going to tell you why.
Okay, all right. And I get his point because he said what he wished that he would have done better as this, in his first term was sort of have a conversation with the American people and used them to get change to happen. And I totally agree with that because he sucked at that.
Yeah.
I think that he could have gotten even more done than he would have had he sort of used the people who elected him to his advantage.
He had the machine, which no other president has ever had.
He did it very poorly. Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Tell me.
Here's why it's genius. Because this is exactly what you say as your talking point when you're the guy who's not the incumbent. And Obama just took it out from under him.
Oh, I see.
So Romney was forced to misspeak. And what Romney said was, I can change Washington. I will change Washington. I'll get the job done from the inside. Romney, who's not on the inside, was forced to stake out that position because Obama said that the outside's the only way to get things done.
Right.
Now, Obama, despite the fact that he didn't use this effectively, has this populist backing.
Yeah.
So he could use it effectively. And to some degree, they did try to. You know, they did have, there were a lot more times in the last 4 years when the Obama administration itself would try to send out sort of like emails and things telling people to call their representatives, telling people to sort of like get involved with their members of Congress because Congress is being so obstructionist.
Yeah.
So I sort of see how this Obama misspeaking on this point could sort of go on, you know, be swept under the rug a little bit. Because I think sort of ultimately we all get what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
But Romney was forced to say something ridiculous in response, something that is in direct contradiction to things that he said were like verbatim before. I mean,
no,
they both
have
verbatim said that you can only change things from the outside. We need new blood. That's a very, that's a famous talking point of any politician. Republicans, though, especially love that talking point.
Yeah.
And now they can't use it because Obama stole it from them.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like despite the fact that it may not have been the greatest thing to hear Obama say.
Yes.
And I think the point sort of is well taken anyway, because everyone knows that the Congress that he was working with was totally obstructionist.
True.
And that to some degree, there was no way for him to get things done from the inside. You know, the things that we accuse him of being ineffective at, a lot of them had to do with things that were out of his control.
That's true.
That's not something that Romney can point to, though. Romney doesn't know if you can get things done from the inside. He's never been there.
Yeah, that's true.
And now he looks like the insider.
Right,
and
exactly.
And Obama looks like the outside renegade changer who's going to hope our way to, you know, fame and fortune or whatever. Like, it's, I think it was accidentally genius.
It was certainly accidentally.
It was accidental.
Because I still don't think he meant to say
it. No, I don't think that he meant to say it that way, but I think it was a genius accident.
Yeah.
The other thing that came out of this Univision forum that was more hilarious were there were suggestions floating around the internet that Romney had basically, like, tanned
dyed
himself.
His skin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Romney, who is having a lot of trouble with Latino voters, despite the fact that his father was born in Mexico, and therefore he is vaguely of Mexican heritage in some sense. First of all, in that Mother Jones footage that was released with the 47% comment, there was another section of that release where he said it would be helpful to be Latino, which was another embarrassing moment.
Yeah.
That people would have gotten over that if it hadn't been for everything else that was in that release. But that was sort of like another embarrassing thing that he said. And then after this Univision thing where he looked remarkably tan.
He didn't look tan. He looked like...
Brown.
He looked brown. He looked sort of orange.
He looked orange.
He looked like John Boehner.
Yeah, he looked like... Well, and I think it was Wonkette that suggested that he was involved in some sort of self-tanner accident or perhaps went out tanning with John Boehner for a little pick-me-up.
Yeah, totally. He did.
So that's sort of what it looked like he did.
Yeah.
He looked unnaturally tan.
It was very bizarre.
And it was very weird.
Yeah.
And also slightly disturbing.
Yeah.
Not just slightly.
Yeah.
Anyway, with all the terrible news about the Republicans, it may not shock you to discover that the Senate polls look
Democrats
great for the Democrats.
Are on the rise.
Yeah.
And they were not such months ago.
Well,
like,
we mentioned
the Republicans have always sort of had not so secret hopes of getting a Senate back.
Yeah.
They really felt like that was
Well, and that was until recently.
Everybody,
it was until recently.
Yeah.
I mean,
everybody thought that they would probably regain control of the House, and the Senate was a little more sort of up for grabs, and who knows what will happen before
right,
now.
Right, we have
no idea.
But
a
like,
lot of the
some
races...
Some big states. I mean, we mentioned before about Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown in Massachusetts. She recently passed him in the polls.
Yeah.
But also...
That's still going to be close, I think.
That's
there are other polls
but
that show
race,
that.
But that race, they were... I mean, Democrats were talking like that race was lost a few months ago.
They were.
She's been behind in the polls since May.
Yes.
And she just pulled ahead randomly after the convention and is sort of gaining momentum again.
Yep.
But we also have Wisconsin. We have Tammy Baldwin.
Running against Tommy Thompson,
yeah,
who
I
has
mean, that's...
been a senator. Wasn't he a senator? He worked in the Bush administration. Oh,
yeah,
he was the governor.
He was the governor.
Yeah, of course.
But he's tremendously popular in Wisconsin, despite being a nutcase.
Yep.
We have Virginia.
Tim Kaine is running against George Allen.
There's
and,
Florida
and
Missouri both have...
Yeah,
races where
and
things
that's
are,
in Missouri. I mean, Claire McCaskill was dead in the water.
Right, that's the Todd Akin race. And there are even a bunch of races that are not, that don't have great polling data where we don't really know what's going to happen, but things look very close in a lot of them. And that's, you know, North Dakota, Montana, Indiana, Nevada, Hawaii, Connecticut, Arizona, Nebraska. I mean, there's like a ton of states where that's the case. And we don't even really know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's not looking like the Republicans are obviously winning in any of those
right,
places.
Right, exactly.
And then there's also sort of like a little, you know, there's some seat switching going on.
Yes.
Ben Nelson is finally leaving the Senate after
and you know
deserving
what?
To be bopped over the head. I don't care if that seat goes to a Republican.
You know
go
what?
Fuck yourself. He was already a Republican.
I was going to say, to a certain degree, if you have a Republican in there, then at least you know that they're going to be caucusing with the Republicans. Whereas Ben Nelson, Ben Nelson single-handedly held up half of the crap that the Democrats wanted to do.
Yeah.
So fuck Ben Nelson.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I'm not sad about... I have long thought that that seat should just go to a Republican because at least then they're not caucusing with us. I just don't want their involvement.
I couldn't agree with you more. That seat doesn't deserve our... Nebraska should have two Republican senators.
Right.
That we should just not have to worry about.
Exactly. But Maine looks like they're going to get an
independent
in Angus King, and they're going to caucus with Democrats. So
Angus. I like that.
Well, it's in Maine. People have names like that in Maine.
You would know.
Yeah.
But
they also call themselves a maniac. There's a lot going on in Maine that really can't be trusted.
Yeah.
But the main races are sort of like, I think, close at least, if not leaning away from Republicanism at this moment.
We've talked a lot about voter fraud on this podcast, and the Pennsylvania voter ID law is being
sent.
It's
like a yo-yo situation
in
the Pennsylvania courts right now.
Yeah, basically the state Supreme Court sent it back to the lower court for reconsideration. They pretty much were just like, look at this again. And they didn't overturn it per se, but I think people think it's
the two
sort
justices that voted against that decision were in favor of blocking it outright. There was not anyone on that court who was just like,
send this on through.
This is constitutional.
Signed, sealed, and delivered.
To the max.
Yeah.
We're just constituting up a storm.
Yeah.
Constitutionalizing up a storm.
And they
constituting
also...
up a storm would be walking a lot.
Yeah, they're not doing that.
No, they're not doing any of that.
Anyway, so that seems to be
so
sort of a good sign.
Promising. I know today, and I think yesterday as well, there was a lot of news about Michelle Obama giving a speech to the Congressional Black Caucus that basically compared our voting rights struggle in this recent election and in the last few years to the sit-ins of,
yes,
I guess,
the 1960s.
Yes,
the sit-ins of our days. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because it's sort of the major civil rights issue of our era.
Yeah.
Which,
it is.
No argument for me.
No,
so,
I know.
Moving
what else
on.
To say. I know. Yes.
Good work, Michelle.
Yes.
In hilarity.
Yeah, we've got some religious news
we have
coming for you.
A bunch. Yeah, we have like sort of the week in wacky religious news.
Yeah.
Coming up. It begins with a story about Mormons.
Shocker.
Shocker.
Yeah, that's going to be a wacky story.
Exactly.
It couldn't be anything
other
than a wacky story.
It couldn't be anything else. David Tweed, who is a blogger on a website called MormonThink.com.
Right. Also, he's a scientist and a novelist.
And a fifth-generation Mormon.
Yeah, sure, anyway.
But he has been sort of threatened with excommunication from the Mormon Church, and I think maybe he's just going to sort of like leave without even letting them excommunicate him.
I'm surprised he's a scientist. I didn't know that they believed in science.
I know. And he went to real schools, too.
Oh, God.
He didn't even, it wasn't.
He didn't even go to Brigham Young?
No, he didn't go to Brigham Young. And
what?
The group that is trying to get him excommunicated is a bunch of Brigham Young professors.
Yeah.
And they are called the Mormon Foundation for Apologetic Information and Research.
That's terrifying.
There is a group called that.
That's terrifying.
I never before realized how close to Scientology Mormonism is.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I mean, it's just as
outer
made
space
up
related
of a religion. As, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's no, I mean, it's sort of the same.
They were only made up really like 60 years apart from each other.
But I feel like a religion that was made up in upstate New York is like slightly less wacky than one that was made up by a sci-fi writer.
In Hollywood.
You know?
Or wherever.
Yeah. And
yeah, fair enough.
They're just sort of like, I know that I like make fun of Mormonism a lot, but it seems slightly more legitimate than Scientology, or it did until I found out that they have a group called the Mormon Foundation for Apologetic Information and Research.
I know. It's true.
So basically this guy got like hauled into the local Mormon offices and like interrogated by Mormon officials for writing some jokes about Mitt Romney and an article called "The God of Mitt Romney: Why Do Some Claim He's Not Christian?"
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess this guy has also been sort of like talking a little bit about the rituals of the Mormon Church, which Mormons hate when people find out what they're actually up to in there.
Well, you would.
Yeah, no. Well, everything that we find out is weird.
It's crazy. Yeah, exactly.
That's sort of, but there's just sort of like a treasure trove, I feel like, of stuff coming out of the spotlight that Mormonism has been put under in the last year because of this Mitt Romney situation.
Yeah.
The situation being that he's running for president. So I feel like we can probably expect more exciting stories of this nature. There is a vigil to support him that's being planned outside of the Orlando Temple, the Latter-day Saints Temple there, for Saturday, September 29th.
I wonder if there's one here.
I know. I wonder
they have that big castle-like
they have like a castle everywhere.
They do.
They're like Scientologists. They build castles for themselves in various locales. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they're like Scientology, like preparing for the return of Joseph Smith. Because isn't that why, like, the Scientologists have places? Don't
they're planning for L. Ron Hubbard to
come back.
They
have houses built for L. Ron Hubbard, like, all over the world.
Casey comes back.
Yeah.
L. Ron Hubbard, who died living in a trailer in Northern California and lied about his war record. That's a story for another day.
Yeah.
A story for today, though, has to do now with Christians.
Yes. And this is sort of, this is crazy. So, I mean, we have actually, I think, talked on this podcast before about sort of our thoughts on whether churches should be tax exempt or not. But there is more than 1,000 pastors are going to openly defy the IRS by coming out and saying who they think their parishioners should vote for president. They're going to send their videos to the IRS, and they're doing it all like on this on the same day.
It's
like they're making like a big day out of it, basically.
A day
to just sort of like
defying the IRS.
Yes.
Here's my feeling. I mean, I don't understand how they can be thinking that they can be both tax exempt and not follow this law. The IRS is just tax law. It doesn't cover free speech.
Right.
Like, they are allowed to say anything they want within a church.
Yeah.
The church cannot be tax exempt if they're endorsing people for president.
Right.
That's the distinction. So just pay your fucking taxes and you can endorse whoever you want.
Well,
I
agree.
It has to do with your tax status, not your free speech rights. And they're walking around acting like somehow not being able to endorse a presidential candidate because of the tax code is like tantamount to their First Amendment rights being violated, which is the craziest thing I've ever heard.
It's totally crazy. And I also think that it's crazy because I think to think that this isn't happening anyway is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And to think that you can't do it in a way that just doesn't come out and openly say, go vote for Mitt Romney.
We've had political organizations that have not been allowed to openly endorse candidates running our election cycles for years.
Yeah.
The money that before Citizens United, the money that was getting paid to, you know, the soft money that was coming into campaigns and whatnot, was all coming from groups that weren't allowed to openly endorse anyone.
Right, exactly.
There's a way to do it without violating this law.
Yes.
But also, if you want to violate the law, fine, just pay taxes.
Just pay, exactly.
I can walk into any church I want and declare that I want Barack Obama to be the president.
Yeah.
No one in the country is stopping me because of a tax-related issue from doing that. They're just stopping the religious organization itself from making that statement.
Well, right. And I mean, anybody who thinks that the church is anything other than a business is fooling themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, churches.
Well, and also other than a political organization.
To make money. I realize that they exist for other reasons. I go to one.
Right.
But
you would be positioned to know that.
But they can't exist otherwise.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, some churches do good things in the community. Yes, they do. They feed the homeless.
My company did a day of service in the community as well.
I agree.
I mean, There's lots of that going on.
The church has to, first and foremost, pay its staff. It has to cover its bills. It has to do, I mean, it's not...
So it has to provide health insurance for its employees that may or may not include birth control.
Birth control, right, exactly.
But I mean, anyone who has heard, like, the history of the Catholic Church knows that it's a business.
Yeah, exactly.
The Catholic Church has always been a business. Yeah. It's always been a political organization as well. Yeah. I mean, and that's really true for any church. And that's, I don't think anyone is sort of in denial about that, least of all the IRS. I just sort of feel like I don't understand the point they're making here.
Right.
It's like, to be a nonprofit, you can't endorse a president.
Right.
Not, you can be a church and endorse the president.
But it's one of those,
you just can't be a nonprofit.
Right. But it's also one of those laws that's just sort of like, who's going to propose overturning that?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to find any Democrat or any Republican who's going to try and take tax exemption away from churches.
You're not going to find someone who wants to suddenly give them the right to endorse presidential candidates.
No, that's true.
Because there's no way a Democratic House or Senate or presidency.
Yeah, of course. And all of these churches should lose their tax exemption.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably will. They're sending their videos into the IRS, I'm assuming that...
IRS has been lax about enforcing this in the past, so they really could have probably just gotten away with it, before, if they hadn't had to make a day out of it.
Yeah. It's an odd thing to make a day out of.
It's such an odd thing to take up the mantle of.
I know.
Because it's like this very specific, like, them hating the IRS... It's sort of like on like grounds that it's like violating their free speech.
Well, and then
it's like, it's like missing the middle piece where they could just not be that, not be a tax exempt organization, and then they could say anything.
My guess is that they're going to do this, lose their tax exemption, and then not pay their taxes. And then it's going to turn into a First Amendment issue where they're going to say, well, I'm not going to pay my taxes because you're infringing upon my free speech, and then that's what it's going to turn into, and then we'll probably see this in the Supreme Court.
We're three steps ahead of you.
We know what's
happening. We know what you're up to.
Yeah.
Someone who we never know what they're up to. Is Steve King.
Yeah.
Who we have the Week in Steve King for you right now. It was as crazy as the last few weeks. Steve King has really been rolling them out.
Yeah, he
has. Fast and furious.
Yeah. This week he and Christy Vilsack had a debate. This was actually, I think, televised. They had one on WHO radio
A while ago.
Nobody listened to him, sure. But anyway, he said that Obama doesn't believe in life and families, and he got booed big time in the room. Like, it was just a chorus of boos as he was going on and on about how Obama's sort of like anti-family and anti-life and anti, you know, whatever.
I can't think of a worse Democratic candidate to make that argument with. Like, I could see how they were getting away with saying shit like that about Bill Clinton, because Bill Clinton was cheating on his wife in the Oval Office.
Sure.
So sure, I get
it.
Barack Obama, though, is like the sort of like pinnacle of family man.
I know.
Seeming like family man image, at least. I mean, I don't know what's going on in there behind closed doors in the Obama family, but they seem like the most wholesome, like American family, full of family values and other things.
Yeah.
That anyone has ever seen in their lives.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just sort of like a crazy time to make that argument when you're running against somebody who doesn't even really, I mean, Mitt Romney doesn't even really seem that human.
Oh, I know.
Let alone like a family man. I know he's got a family.
Sure.
He's got sons that are like helping destroy his campaign. But I mean, Steve King, I just sort of feel like he's just sort of like saying things that he thinks will sort of
he's sort of just like,
he's just like picking Brent. I'm moving my hands in a funny way to indicate to Brent what I mean. He gets it, but you guys
won't. If a politician can jump the shark, if that's a thing that a politician can do, then he sort of has.
He's done it.
It's sort of almost like his calling card to a certain degree.
Oh yeah, that's what he's been up to for the last few weeks.
Because here's a, here's a jump the shark moment here. He has spoken before about things that are leading to the United States being a nanny state.
Sure.
And this week he was really into ragging on the speed limit in Iowa.
Which I would like to point out is lower than most other states.
It is.
It's a state by state law.
Yeah.
The Iowa state legislature can choose to raise the speed limit at any moment that they deem
fit. Iowa state legislature, which he does not belong to.
No, exactly. And if you've ever driven through like New Mexico and Arizona, you know that sometimes people make poor choices. Because driving on a highway at 85 is fucking terrifying.
It's terrifying. Uh-huh. Well, in your Beetle, it's terrifying.
Listen, it's terrifying in any car that's not a tank. And sure. Probably is pretty terrifying in a tank.
Right.
But he also
yeah, he got down to some, like, real brass tacks here and, like, did some math that I don't understand.
Well.
But he did it.
And Brent often says he doesn't understand math, and it's often just because Brent doesn't really like math. This is not a mathematical argument. It's just a lot of words that use math terminology.
Yes.
It's, like, the longest explanation where he's basically arguing that going 55 is taking time out of his life. Like, it's like wasting his life.
Yes.
But he has an exact calculation for how much of his life is being wasted by going 55 miles an hour. I think you should just read the whole quote. I think you should just do it.
Good God, starting here?
Just do it.
All right, here we go. He says, you calculate that each one of us on the day we were born was granted the
actuarial
number.
We don't know what that is.
I don't know what that means. At that time, I figured it at 76 years.
You have a life expectancy,
yes,
give or take, of 76.
Right, sure. So when you figure those hours that you have in your lifetime at 76 years, and then you figure out how many hours you spend unnecessarily looking out the windshield at 55 miles an hour, and you calculate the lifespan, and you divide it into the time saved and the miles that are traveled on rural roads in Iowa each year, and it came down to this, that if we drive 65 instead of 55, we will have saved 79.64 lifetimes of driving. In other words, getting to our destination, doing something productive that has value too.
Lifetimes of living.
Lifetimes of living. I don't know how I missed that. That's crazier. What the fuck? I mean, I just don't even know where to begin with that. It's so insane. I had trouble reading it. I've read it before. It's highlighted on this page.
It is,
and
so weird. I couldn't
get through it because I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know. It doesn't mean anything.
And I don't understand how he arrived at this.
And he was explaining it like a math teacher, too, which is hilarious.
First of all, what's a lifetime of living? I know.
Well,
second of all, what constitutes 79.64 of those?
I don't know. Is that for one person?
What an oddly specific number.
But for who? Like, for Iowans? Because one person can't have skipped 79 lifetimes just driving 55 instead of 65. It doesn't make any sense.
Steve King has said a lot of things that have been hilarious. This is my favorite thing that he's ever said.
I think so, too.
And he also said this on the House floor.
Yeah, he was not.
He was just, like, speaking to other members of Congress about this.
I wonder if members of his own party sometimes are just sort of like, oh, listen. God. Fucking King.
Anyway, it can only go downhill from here. I mean,
yeah,
this is the pinnacle of Steve King. You've just witnessed the pinnacle.
I have been trying for months to try and find polling in that race, which doesn't exist. But I did this week on Real Clear Politics. They have basically, like, polling for any single race that you can click on. And they don't have polling for that. But what they do have is a House map. Mm-hmm. And they have that listed as a toss-up race.
Oh.
Which I thought was interesting. That's sort of like the only lead I can get on any actual numbers coming out of
that race. The other things that he talked about while he was addressing the House about things that were on his mind in math. Was energy efficient light bulbs, which
he hates energy efficient light bulbs.
He also said at the Conservative Political Action Conference, I can't even read, I'm laughing too hard.
I know.
That he drilled holes in his water saving shower head to cut his shower time because, it was giving him more time to beat up liberals. 3 minutes that he saved.
Uh-huh.
He's all about saving time.
He's really a time saver.
Exactly. He's out there to get you those 79.64 lifetimes of living.
Oh, God. Now,
that's the foundation we should start. Lifetimes of Living Foundation.
I like that. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, from the weekend Steve King to the weekend penises. Yeah.
A natural combination.
We're ending the podcast with not one, not two, but three stories.
Three penis stories.
About penises. All politically related, which is awesome.
You may remember, we were just talking about this before the podcast, that we began this podcast with a story about Rush Limbaugh.
We did, yes.
This
podcast, but
I mean, the Brain Trust Live began with a story about Rush Limbaugh and Sandra Fluke. And
we can owe our current fame to Rush Limbaugh.
Exactly.
I don't know.
But I feel like, and that was also about sex.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, he's a dirty pervert,
exactly.
Obviously.
And this is, I think, the first time that you're going to hear Rush Limbaugh's voice on our podcast.
Oh, it is.
So things are really moving along in the Brain Trust Live world. This is Rush Limbaugh talking about a recent study on male genitalia.
What the study found was that the male genitalia has shrunk over the last 50 years, and the researchers said that it was due to air pollution, and Rush Limbaugh had a different idea.
I don't buy this. I think it's feminism. I think if it's tied to the last 50 years, the average size of member is 10% smaller than it's 50 years, has to be the feminazis.
The old feminazis.
Yeah.
Feminazis everywhere.
He loves to...
Shrinking penises mm-hmm. left, right, and center.
Yeah.
Like... I would love to know the sort of logical progression of how he sees that happening. Like,
yeah,
what feminazis are doing to specifically shrink penises.
Correct.
Because I feel like that's a study that a lot of Americans would be interested in reading.
I would be.
Certainly.
Uh-huh.
See, it's directly impacting us all, isn't it?
And if they are, I'm fucking pissed.
That will be the end of the feminazi movement.
Whoever's doing it, I'm coming after you.
Right. But the penis jokes didn't end there.
No.
Because the Bidens were...
Both of them.
Both Bidens made penis jokes.
You would expect a Joe Biden penis joke.
Sure.
I think he already made a joke about his parents having sex that we talked about a while back. But Jill, I wasn't
expecting. That came
expected.
Out of nowhere.
Came
She's
out of
a
nowhere.
Professor.
She is. God. Dr. Biden. Dr. Jill
Dr.
Biden.
Dr. Jill Biden.
Anyway, she, inadvertent, but nonetheless... she was speaking at a campaign stop in New Hampshire, and she said, "I've seen Joe close up," and she made a sort of
motion
gesture with her hands, sort of that would imply what the size of his penis was.
Right.
Pretty much. I don't know how else to describe it.
Exactly.
And people giggled
and she,
in the audience. And
then
sort
everything
of,
that she said after that was shaded with the knowledge that she had just done that.
Exactly.
Because then she said... I've seen how his optimism, his determination, his big, strong heart drives him to make a difference for other people every day.
Yeah.
I've heard the urgency in his voice when it comes to talks with the people he's met. I mean, there
then
was no
just,
way to not read
no.
into everything
no.
else she said
uh-huh.
after that.
Yeah. And then...
Biden
oh,
himself.
Joe. Yes. So
out there.
He was...
Biden away.
At a, also at a campaign stop, I believe. And, in New Hampshire as well.
Yeah, he was at a high
and,
school.
And, he was at a high school, and basically he, said, are there any other, he said, are there people who play sports here, basically?
Right,
he
well,
was
he was,
like, I know...
with a group of athletes. There were,
right.
football players and baseball players, and he was like,
yes.
is anyone else here?
Right.
And someone said cheerleaders.
Right. And he said, oh, guess what? The cheerleaders in college are the best athletes in college. You think I'm joking? They're almost all gymnasts. The stuff they do on hardwood, it blows my mind. Which, obviously, we know what he was saying. But, again, it's just sort
it
of
was,
like, oh, Joe.
God.
It's like, you just...
Sometimes old people say the darndest things.
Yes. Specifically Joe Biden.
Specifically old people from Scranton, Pennsylvania, yeah. named Joe Biden. Did you know he was from Scranton, Pennsylvania?
I hadn't heard. Where'd
no,
you hear that? Everywhere?
Everywhere.
Yeah. Okay.
There hasn't been a single day that has passed where I haven't heard about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's your weekend news.
There it is.
Penises galore.
Mm-hmm.
Tax documents.
Romney's campaign falling apart. Him.
We are coming up on the first debate. It's early October.
So soon.
I'm excited for it.
Two podcasts from now, I think.
Yeah.
Probably.
And we're gonna our podcast next week is gonna be a day late.
Oh God.
I know. I'm going out of town.
But I was going to a ritzy wedding.
That's right.
With the 53%.
Me and the 53% are going to be partying up a storm.
On Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
Be jealous.
Yeah, I'm certainly jealous of myself. But we will see you probably Monday night for Tuesday morning.
Yes.
Next week. And then we will be back to cover...
The debate.
Yes.
All right, have a good week, y'all.
Have a good week. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.